Hey guys, before we begin this episode, I want to tell you about my experience with Sentry.io. So we recently launched the new Remote Ham Radio Nuxt console on the web, and immediately we started getting tickets from users who were experiencing crashes, error messages, things that I had nothing to go on besides what the user was telling me, and it was really, really unproductive way, and it was a terrible experience for the users, of course. So I threw the Sentry.io client in there, set up my free account, and immediately I was getting real-time errors flowing into the dashboard there. I had a breadcrumb trail so I could see what the user was doing leading up to the crash. I had metadata about who the user was, what release of the application it was, what tabs were visible in the UI, right? Because I had that in there as well. And it really helped me narrow down and pinpoint individual issues and check them off my list. It's really great. And of course, because it tracks your releases, it tells you over time, you know, which bugs get fixed in new releases, which releases introduce new bugs, and so on. And I even have it hooked up with GitHub and Slack, so I can link my issues there, and I can get real-time notifications in Slack when things are going on. Basically, it's just been a huge help and a really productive boon. It gives me the confidence to fix my bugs and know that I can resolve issues without even having to hear from a user. So I think you'll have a lot of success with Sentry.io as well. You can head over there to give it a try. There's a free developer account, and it's great for early projects, personal projects, that sort of thing. Again, that's at Sentry.io. They get it. Your code's broken, and they just want to help you fix it. I had two calls on Slack today of about 2 hours apiece.
Oh.
So about half my day. Then I just came back from 99s. Where I had to yell talk because it's always busy there.
Mm-hmm.
Rightfully so, because it's one of the better chains that we go to.
Are 99, is that like an Applebee's? See, I've seen one from the outside in Vermont, but
don't even start with Applebee's. All right. Don't even get me. You're gonna get me fired up, man.
Is that Applebee's?
No. 99's is like, it's like 10 levels above an Applebee's. But yes, it's a chain like that. Yeah.
So it's like an Applebee's.
Sure.
Do they have half-off apps?
No, but
okay.
They do have, and this is coming from someone who grew up on Cape Cod, they have one of the best chips, fish and chips.
Fish and chips.
They're one of the best fish and chips that I've ever experienced, which doesn't make any sense. I realize it's not logical. It shouldn't be possible, but damn, it was good. So anyway, the point being is my voice is a little hoarse from normally sitting in silence to talking all day.
I've had more calls than normal this week as well, and I don't like it. I feel it is technically my work, but I don't feel productive on those days where I just have a bunch of calls. So I get to the end of the day, I'm like, what did I actually do? I just talked at people. I'm still stuck. I think I was talking about it last week, but I'm still stuck on this idea that like my job is me writing code, when really that's about 50% of my job now, because I spend the rest of my time on calls and writing in Google Docs and stuff.
Yeah, I think sometimes a day full of meetings actually can be way more productive, especially when it's like big picture stuff, right?
Yeah. Is that what you were doing? Big picture stuff?
It wasn't supposed to be, but it ended up devolving. It was one of those meetings where it's like, oh, here's our weekly checkup. And then it devolved into like,
oh, okay.
What are we working on? What are we doing? Where's the business going kind of meeting? So,
yeah.
No, it's all good stuff though. I don't want to get the details over right now, but, yeah, it was, it was a Friday kind of Thursday.
I gotcha. Yeah, some of my calls this week have been trying to hire people or, you know, suss some people out, stuff like that. So that's always fun.
Yeah, just little stuff. It's fine. Easy.
Yeah, exactly. Little things. Thinking about process, like we talked about last week, extreme programming, what I want the team to look like eventually. I actually had a call, kind of a virtual coffee with a new friend of the show, Noah, this morning, and his company seems to be like right where I would like to be in a few years. You know, he's got I think he said their tech team was around 9 people, and they also work with boot camp locally in Dallas to help, you know, give people some real world experience and stuff like that. So that was kind of cool, you know, talking to him and, you know, learning more about his business and how he runs things. And I was like, that sounds a lot like what I want to do eventually. So it's kind of a cool connection to have made.
Yeah, that's cool to have those. Again, this goes back to your innate ability to just kind of form business connections better than anyone I know. So props for that, man.
Well, he reached out to me initially. I actually did, it's not out yet, I don't think, but I did a recording episode, or I recorded a podcast with him earlier this week. He's got a podcast himself, and so he interviewed me on that. And so that's how, I think he originally listens to this show, and then he reached out to me from that. But yeah, so we scheduled a coffee, and we started talking, and I was like, man, you're doing exactly what I think I want to be doing. And yeah, so he's CTO of a company called Variable. Pretty cool app. I think it's variableops.com. Yeah. But that was cool. Just kind of reached out and was like, hey, and after the recording, I was like, hey, let's have a coffee and just talk shop. And he said, okay. So that was kind of encouraging. I mean, I think like you talking big picture stuff kind of made me think about that. And I have some people that I reach out to and ask like, hey, how do you hire people? What do you look for? How do I make the process not suck? You know, I don't want to be sending people code interviews and things. And a lot of the advice I've gotten is like hire from within your own network. So if there's someone that you already know well and they're looking, it makes sense to hire that person because you can kind of skip all of that stuff. So it's been interesting for sure. Dealing with a lot of, what's that term that we don't like, where you feel when you feel not good enough.
Imposter syndrome.
And yeah, dealing with a lot of imposter syndrome, you know. That was the other thing was, you know, try not to limit to candidates where you would feel comfortable managing them. I think like looking for someone that I feel like I'm a better programmer than would be obviously a mistake, right?
You don't want to be the smartest person in the room.
Yeah, yeah, that sort of thing. So just kind of dealing with a lot of that and thinking about big picture stuff like, can I do this? Is a question that comes up a lot. So that's been fun this week. Just kind of thinking about like, can I do this? Am I good enough? Do I know enough? And all that stuff. So
hold on before we get too far. It's not posted yet, but what's the podcast?
Yeah, the podcast is called Code Story, and I'm verifying the URL right now. Yeah, CodeStory.co is the podcast. Code Story, and there are actually two episodes. And so basically, Noah goes around and he just interviews some CTOs and tries to get the story of, you know, how a company went from A to B, how they started, how they grew, where they're at, where they want to go, challenges along the way, things like that. So I think I beat him to the punch because I knew he was going to ask me like what were some of my mistakes along the way. And so I beat him to the punch and I was like, here are my mistakes, man.
They're always in the front of my mind. I'm always thinking about
it. Yeah. Yeah. They're always there. But it was a fun talk. I enjoyed the conversation. So yeah, CodeStory.co. I had to check that out. I got two episodes out, more coming. And Noah's cool. I like him a lot. We hit it off right away. Started talking about true crime podcasts and sci-fi novels and books. So cut from the same cloth, I guess.
Sounds like fun. I'm looking forward to checking that out.
Yeah. So yeah, I've been struggling with that a lot this week. I don't know about you, but that's me this week.
Yeah. It's funny because this is actually the first time I've really had a chance to catch up, and because we've both been busy, and I'm actually kind of in a very similar spot. I don't want to get too much into it now, but like it's the same kind of thing where it's like I have to kind of get into a manager role where it's like, hey, I can't do everything. We have this, you know, we're talking big picture ideas today, and it was just like it's overwhelming. It's like Atlas with the world on his shoulders. You know, that's what it feels like sometimes when you try to look at the big picture, like, oh, there's so much work to do. And we have such big ideas and plans and we know the place we need to be and we know where we are. And it's just, how do you get there? Right. And it's like, is it time? Is it unknown quantities? Is it just like luck? Is it work? Is it money? Like what resources do we need to allocate to get where we need to go? And we're at the point where we're like, okay, we do need another developer to help us tackle these situations. And we're going to be dealing with that over the next few weeks and trying to find someone. And like you said, like hiring from within your network. Like in our Slack channel, like I know I've met a bunch of people through the Elixir Slack, which through our Discord. And it's like, I don't know. I just got to do some exploration. And I have a bad track record. I'm 0-2 for hiring contractors for RHR in terms of success rate. Like, I don't know what it is. I'm just not that experienced with it. I need to make better decisions about finding people. So just kind of struggling with that. And
well, were the people that you tried out before the contracting positions? Because I remember you talking to me about this. Maybe it was a year ago, or maybe a little bit more than a year ago. Before, you're having a little bit of trouble with somebody that was working on a React app, I think, right?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Were those people just like random contractors, or were they people from within your network?
No, again, that was people that I did know, but
Okay,
but only on a surface level, right? I didn't really know from a technical level like what they'd worked on or what their level of experience was, or even what tech stacks like they were comfortable using, right? So it's like I guess I need to approach it from more of like you said, like an interviewer role, as opposed to just like, hey, let's work on this together. It really, the conversation needs to be, hey, I've written up the spec, can you go implement this in this way?
Right. You need to feel confident that the person can do what you need them to do. And I've been seeing a lot of stuff about people kind of talking, like shouting at companies saying like, hey, hire junior devs. And while I would like to do that, I think in both of our current positions, that would almost like hurt us more, because I don't feel like we would have enough time to spend with that person to help them mature fast enough. But then also you couldn't trust that person to just get the work that you need done.
Yeah, exactly. That was one of the conversations we had today, actually. Exactly that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult. It's interesting, right? Like talking to people that I've known for a little while, and it is like an interview, but I try to make it not feel like, hand me your resume, let me look at it while you look at me, while I look at your resume, sort of thing, you know? It's more, so what I've been trying to do, and let me know how this differs from your process, but I kind of take them through what I've been working on, what some of our goals are. And just before that, I might explain our tech stack, like, hey, we're Elixir. We use Phoenix and Absinthe on top of Elixir. You know, our front end is Express and Nuxt.js, Postgres, Elasticsearch, whatever. And just kind of see if they're aware of those things, if they have any experience in those things. And then from there, I'll just kind of say, like, here's some of the things that we're working on and we have planned. You know, how do you have any ideas or thoughts about these things? And I'm trying to do it in a way, and maybe I'm just being too sensitive about this, but trying to do it in a way where I'm not pulling ideas that I could like steal from them, in a sense. Because I've seen a lot of people talking about how some companies will assign people work that could actually be used in production later. Right?
Oh yeah, I've heard of that.
Design this
yeah.
flow, or you know. So I'm trying to just kind of like, I guess, pick at their sensibilities. Like, hey, look at this. Like, let's work through it together, you know? Let's think about this together. No pressure. What would you do? How might you approach this differently, or something like that? So I try to make it as casual as possible. And, you know, buying them a coffee, even though it's like virtual, you know what I mean? I might send them $5 via cash or something and be like, all right, let's have a coffee and just like talk shop for a little bit. That's been my approach anyway.
No, I really like that. Anything you have is going to be more structured than what I've done, just from a lack of experience. Like, that's just what it comes down to. Like, I just haven't had the experience doing this. I do like that idea. And yeah, you don't want to, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I try to connect too much with a person and I have trouble disassociating between the person and their skill set.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of my biggest weaknesses, honestly.
I feel that definitely. One thing that really helped me out actually was one of the people in our network that we both know. We kind of had a call and talked, and he said to me, and this was really cool. He said to me, you know, maybe if I'm not the right person, if I'm not the right fit, maybe I can help you, you know, iron that out, like figure out what that looks like for you in you talking to somebody. And so he was the first person I talked to, and I ended up letting him know, like, yeah, this is what I think our company needs at this current time. Like, this is what I think the focus should be. And I think that really helped me, like, talking to a person about it first. And I guess that's, like, a luxury that not everyone has, is, like, to find a candidate that's like, hey, I understand that I might not be the fit, but let me help you figure out what that actually looks like, you know? But, yeah, it's been, I think, like you said, the hard part is if you know somebody, disassociating your friendship with that person and their technical abilities would, you know, could be difficult. I'm not really sure how to approach that. I guess I'm lucky enough so far that the people I've talked to, I know they can be productive, and they're, you know, familiar with all the different areas that I would need. Again, so I could be in a privileged position there, just kind of lucky to have those contacts. But
and to be clear, it's not that I feel it's not like I feel bad like turning someone down. Like I wouldn't, if something's not a good fit, I'll say so and not feel bad about it. It's fine. Like it's just a professional, you know, it's just business more or less. But like I have trouble even seeing to that point.
Right. Okay.
Right. I have trouble seeing past the personal relationship, I guess, more or less. And judging it just put on objective, like you're a robot that writes code level.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's just something that just takes experience, just takes time. I recognize that I do it. I recognize that I'm pretty bad at it right now. And so I'm just trying to be more proactive in avoiding that.
Yeah. Have you looked up any resources or read any articles or anything on the subject or?
No, because like it hasn't. This is a brand, like literally this is today, right? Like, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that we were going to be doing this. Gotcha. So,
yeah,
maybe I should, like, I definitely should, you know, if you have anything or I'll poke around definitely and see what I can find. Cause you know, this is more of like a CTO role thing, like that you've kind of been musing on for recently.
Yeah. I mean, really, I would hesitate to link to any articles cause I did a bunch of looking and it kind of falls into the trap of, every company and their side projects all have SEO blogs where they spit out listicles.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So I Googled something like how to hire the right programmer or team member or something along those lines. And it was just listicle after listicle full of empty content. And so what I started doing then was asking people that I knew have hired other people. And they were all, that's where they all said, just hire from within your network if you can. If you can't, that's another story, you know? And so they haven't provided me with that information yet, but that was their first advice to me, was just find someone, if you know someone that could potentially either like do that role now or grow into that role relatively quickly, that's not super junior, that might be a good fit.
I mean, I'll just, for the sake of example, this guy I talked to today, I know him through the Elixir Slack. I've met him at ham radio conventions. He's written a ham radio Phoenix app, and I was talking with him and like, hey, this is this project. And like, he's a more of a React guy, but I'm like, listen, we're all in on Vue in the shop. And he's like, oh yeah. Well, no, he's like, you know, Vue is probably not that hard to learn. And I'm like, you're right. It's not that hard to learn. He's like, you know, he's willing to learn. It's not that hard. He's got example stuff to work off of. Like, I don't think it's going to be, I'm not going to get hung up on the tools. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If I think that he can do the work, you know, once we talk some more, it's like it's gonna be a no-brainer, especially because of the just having the ham radio knowledge. So that's not a prerequisite, right? Like I'm gonna try to specify everything ahead of time so that really any monkey could write the code more or less, but at least, and that's another thing, it's just the documentation piece and like getting it all ironed out before you even start the work, right? Working with another developer and that whole thing.
Right. Yeah, I'm kind of trying to figure that stuff out too, documenting everything that someone we need to know, or like at least combining it in one spot. But I guess like that.
Well, you have a really good head start. Like you've been documenting like crazy, right?
Yeah, we have a lot of Google Docs kind of saved up. We've been writing feature specs and things like that. And we do document the code a lot. Thanks, you know, again, thanks to Elixir. And so we do have some head, like, you know, head starts there, but it's still, I don't know. I feel like I struggle with a little bit of like sending a new hire, like here's a folder full of Google Docs, go through it. You know, that's not great. Obviously I would try to like be on a call and like walk through and things like that, but I've been looking for tools. Maybe there's not a right tool to help, you know, maybe there's just human hours need to be spent on this, but I was looking at tools and there's one, I can't remember off the top of my head, I might have to put it in the show notes, but you could hook it up to a Google Doc folder and it pulls the content in and then basically it makes it into like a collaborative, editable wiki for your team. And Google Docs could just be one of the data sources, right? But the problem there is like, if realistically, if I look at this and I hire somebody, we are the only two using this thing, the rest of the team is not going to use it. There's not enough incentive for them to use it. So then I think like, is it a waste of my time, you know, to do that? So I'm kind of been running in circles there, figuring it out. Like I ask people, hey, how does your company document stuff? And I always get these like mixed answers of like, oh, we don't, or, you know, bus factor, like this one dude knows all of it. And so we just kind of talk to him, or similar thing. Like we just have some Google Docs. I haven't really talked to anyone where we're like, yeah, everything's organized in Notion, or yeah, everything's organized in this other app. I haven't spoke to one person that things are like that. So maybe it's a pipe dream I have that I don't be able to realize. So, I mean, the other point that you were making about this person being, you know, more familiar with React, and they said, well, Vue wouldn't be that difficult to learn. That led me, or, you know, that kind of brought the question up in my mind, especially on back-end side of things. You know, obviously, Elixir devs are slimmer. There's not as many of them around. Would you rather hire someone that's like, you know, has some experience with Elixir in Phoenix and your stack, and maybe is a little bit, you know, not as well-rounded in terms of like database design and kind of conceptual things? Or would you rather hire someone that is pretty experienced in database design, conceptual things, you know, on that level and not super familiar with Elixir and Phoenix?
It's a really good question because, like, on a surface level, like the language that you're using to implement the thing and the frameworks around it are just implementation details, right?
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge of higher level design principles and design patterns and all that stuff is like, it's universally applicable to anything, right?
Right.
So in that case, like, experience kind of generally wins out. I mean, look at Paul, right? Like, how much experience did Paul have before you hired him? Like 2 weeks of Elixir, right?
A week before he started, he built something in Elixir. He built a multiplayer game server in Elixir.
Great. 1 week and he was on board. Like, that's
right.
That's ideal.
I mean,
you're right. It is kind of, it can be narrow-minded to only look within the tech stack that you're using. And of course, we're using a lot of different tech, so that narrows it even further, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what else, what other criteria do you use to filter out people that you know? I'm not just going to like go to like a random person on the street and tell them like, hey, you want to work for me? Like there's some middle ground there where it's like, it comes down to kind of experience, I guess.
Yeah. I guess that's where people kind of get stuck in the rat race of trying to qualify people with tests and things like that. Like those automated code tests and coder pads or whatever. I don't know. I think that's something I've been trying to figure out myself too, is like, do I look for someone specifically with Elixir experience or do I look for someone that's a little bit more seasoned, maybe in other areas, has experience building e-commerce platforms? And that's the other hard part too, is because we're not just an e-commerce platform. That's just part of what we do. So yeah, it's just tough.
I can tell you from the other end of things, from the employee perspective. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to, I met up with a guy one summer. I was doing a summer internship. I met up with a guy who had written this really, really great iOS app. And I was just very, very green to iOS development. But I told him, like, hey, your app is awesome. I'm a good developer. Like, I'm willing to learn and, like, put in the effort and time and effort to, like, learn the stack to, you know, to work for you because this app is awesome and there's tons of potential in it. And, I got a kind of cold response to that. You know, like, I always got a, like, oh, that's nice. Like,
mm-hmm.
And that really didn't hurt, but it was definitely like, I'm trying to give you a chance to like prove myself that I can pick this up and it's fine. I'll figure it out. And I wasn't even given the opportunity. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
that,
now I've got two iOS apps, right? Like, obviously I figured out eventually.
Yeah.
It's just, I was looking for a sign of kind of a project to sort of kickstart that learning experience. And I can see where sort of just, if you just filter by keyword, right, that you do lose some opportunity there in terms of talent.
Yeah. That's a really good point. A person I had a call with earlier, I think it was last week, we kind of went over some stuff and they blew my mind. And it was nothing engineering related. We were just kind of going through some pages on our app and they were like, yeah, I might change this here. And I was like, wow, that's a really good idea. Like, I would have never thought about that because I stare at this thing every day. And it just would have never crossed my mind to do that, you know? And I guess I just get kind of stuck because there's so much just pure engineering work to be done, shoring features up and just, you know, refactoring and making things better. And then there's this whole other world of like UX and design focused things that make it better for our customer. And it's so hard to just on two people, like have all that work on two people, you know? I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, but That's also interesting to me too. And that's why I'm kind of flip-flopping back and forth. Do I look for a generalist that's back end front end? Do I look for more of a front end person that can really focus in on that thing and let me focus in on the other side of things? You know, and then talking to Noah, his team are all generalists. So most of the devs on his team have a pretty good design eye. And so that's kind of how they manage that. They don't have any pure designers on their team. And so I guess my answer might be like, it depends on the person and depends on where we are at as a company right now, you know? So trying to find that needle in a haystack, so to speak, sounds like it's going to be challenging. But I guess to go back to the original question, that's a really good thing for me to keep thinking about is, do I look for someone specifically with Elixir experience? Like you said, Paul didn't have Elixir experience. He had a lot of previous architectural, you know, programming experience, and he picked it up really quickly. So what he wasn't able to pick up quickly, I was just like, oh yeah, here's the answer to that, you know, because I'm around it all the time.
Yeah. And so I guess really, if you look at it, if you take a step like a higher level, it's really like, when you hire somebody, are you looking for someone who either A, you can mold, like can pick up your, what you know, and you can kind of mold them to your existing processes and technology stack and structure? Mm. Or do you look for someone who has fresh ideas and can bring, you know, bring new concepts and bring new perspectives into the app? I mean, those two things are not mutually exclusive, but like,
right.
That's kind of the game you're playing here, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the game. The answer is to take some seed round funding and hire 20 people.
Well, unfortunately, we don't all have that luxury.
Yeah, right? We don't have that luxury either. Yeah, now I'm just going to be mulling this over.
Throw the spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks.
I like what you said there. Finding the person that you're able to mold and grow into the position. That's ultimately what I would really want to do, you know? Ideally, someone can come in and just be productive right now because I'm so busy. And like, if I'm not writing code, no one's writing code at this point, you know, because tomorrow's Paul's last day. So, and not that that's like the most important thing, code being written, but that, you know, that means that refactoring is not being done. That means that maintenance isn't being done. That means that the platform's not growing, I guess. Maybe that's not all bad, but I certainly know there's a lot of places where we wanna make things better for our new customers. So I don't know. If I have to spend a portion of my time on calls and docs, that means that nobody else is spending time on the other thing. So maybe that's why I have such a sense of urgency to find someone that can kind of jump in, even though I realize that like it's going to take a few weeks for someone to, you know, ramp up to speed and be productive. But I know that's one thing I'm trying to do. What's funny is that Noah asked me at the end of the show, I think he asked if I had any advice for other people that are trying to, like, you know, want to be a CTO one day or whatever. And my piece of advice was stick your head out of the water sometimes more often than you do. And really, I was talking to myself. And I think this is one of those times where I feel such a sense of urgency to replace the role to have productivity happening that maybe I need to take a break and kind of like, you know, bring my head out of the water, take a breath, look around and assess things that way, because it'll probably be easier to make the right call doing that than being in a rush to fill a position.
Yeah, because really when you're looking for somebody, it's the qualities you're looking for are really a product of where your business is at that current time, right? Mm-hmm. Like you kind of said it yourself. I mean, exactly, like you're at a point now where you need help, like with the stuff that exists. You need help with support and maintenance and keeping things going and refactoring and moving things forward, like in terms of what you guys have now. Like you just literally need like two more hands to write code, right, on a keyboard next to you,
right?
And that's a very different discussion than like, hey, things are stagnating, or hey, we're growing, we need to add new features, we need to pull in new customers. Like that's a totally different discussion, right?
And that's a really good observation, because that's exactly where we're at. We're not at a phase where we're adding new feature right now, because we just did that for 16 months straight, basically.
Right.
Because like, you know, the app was one thing, and then we realized this is a better market fit if we do this. It wasn't a complete pivot. It was just refocusing some things. And so for a year and a half, we worked on that, and you know, still at that point, it's only two people, but we did that for a year and a half, and now we're like, okay, we are where we wanted to be. now what it looks like, what my efforts look like now is, like you said, refactoring and making things better and improving what we have now that we just added a bunch of stuff, right? So showing some love to the stuff that we added in the last 16 months. And that is different than having something that's stagnating or having something where you just need to keep adding new stuff to it. And yeah, I guess that's where I'm at, is like, I don't want it to feel stagnant and feel not as good as it could be, especially when we're doing a big sales push and all that. We actually just are finalizing a deal with a new salesperson. So our sales staff is growing, which is awesome, you know, but inevitably that'll lead to more work for me. So that's another straw on the camel's back, I suppose. But yeah, it is kind of like a sense of urgency in that, not that we have to add a bunch of stuff, but that we want to make sure that the time I spent this like 16 months isn't wasted, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a really good way to frame it.
Yeah.
It's funny because if we're discussing it in that terms, like I'm looking at my notes from our meetings today, and it's like, it's kind of the polar opposite where I'm looking at things and I'm saying, okay, we just launched brand new front end interface, which is easy to update and maintain and is way better than what we had before. We've got Phoenix on the back end dealing with all our message passing and stuff. It's super maintainable. It's super easy to deploy. It uses like no server resources. Like everything's happy in server land. Mm-hmm. Everything's happy in front end land. And now we're in this precipice where we are on the cusp of forming a new business partnership with these other companies. We're looking to sort of grow the business in different services, different, you know, income streams, which I can talk a little bit about more later if we mm-hmm. get time to actually talk about what I put in the show notes, because we're okay. completely just winging it right now. And one of the things I did today, I can't put this in the show notes, unfortunately, but I drew a dependency tree graph where I, on the right-hand side, it's like, it literally says RHR world domination, right? And then on the left side, there's a bunch of different bubbles. It's just like a graph all pointing to dependencies. Okay, in order to get this done, we have to get this done. And then it fans out from there. In order to get this done, we have to get this done. And high-level features, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of showing where we are, where we need to be, and what needs to depend on what in order to get that done. And just because that's the only way I can conceptualize, like doing a bulleted linear list doesn't do it for me. Gantt charts don't do it for me. Like this is the best way I can conceptualize, is like, it's literally a dependency tree of like a, a mixed project or something. Right.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we're at the point where it's like, okay, we need the next big thing here. We need a new service. We need a new to move the product forward. And so that's kind of where I'm at in terms of looking for someone to help me. It's like, I can't do it all at once, right? I need to focus on one of these bubbles while someone else can focus on another bubble, and we could do things in parallel in order to move this graph from left to right. So that's kind of where I'm at. I don't really know. It's a good spot to be in, I feel like.
Yeah, so I actually had the same discussion or conversation with my boss a few weeks ago when Paul was, you know, let us know that he accepted a different position. And I had been talking to her a little bit about this, but I was basically saying like, hey, the surface area is too much. We have too many things for two people. And we have two other big things that we want to add. I've talked about both of them before, one being POS, another one being something different, but they're both like almost equally as large projects. And I was like, I can't let you schedule either of these things, because what we have all right now is too much still for two people to like really maintain and make better at the same time. It just can't be done. And so that's kind of what I've been doing. Maybe I should make a chart like that, and maybe that'll help, because I think like the other team understands, like, yeah, you guys are busy, but I don't know that they understand the depth of like, hey, we've been adding for 16 months. So like these changes that you asked for 2 years, like 2 years ago, doing similar things now is so much more complicated because there's so many more customizations and settings that people can use. I can't just like go and add stuff willy-nilly, right? It's just a different beast now. Something that may have taken me a few days back then might take me longer now because it just touches so many more things, right? And so a linear list like me pointing to the features page and saying, hey, this is a lot of stuff, maybe doesn't communicate as well as a chart like you showed me earlier today.
I don't know. It goes back to our discussion last week about Microsoft and their really ridiculous charts. you can represent any businessy thing with lots of colors and squares. Someone will make sense of it.
Yeah, yeah. And then we'll have calls. I'll have calls with some of the salespeople, and they'll ask me about a feature, and then I'll tell them, you know, it's going to be, that'll take a while. And then we do a call to talk about it. And then I explain like why, and they're almost always like, oh, I didn't realize all this other stuff that you had to think about, you know? And that's fine. They're not technical. It's not their job. You know, they're not supposed to sit there and think about all the nitty gritty details. But when it's like, I don't know if you ever saw that thing, you could hook it up to a Git repository and it would kind of like draw on a tree of nodes for commits and it just like explodes, right? So they see a little piece of it, and in my mind, they might say this feature, and my brain draws the tree, you know, the lines and the nodes connecting each other of like what all is affected and how many things are actually touched with a change like that. And so I have to try to communicate that some way.
You're seeing the Matrix, man.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, maybe I'll try a chart like that. But yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of cool. Like, I'm excited to hear that you're in that spot, you know, like you're looking. The potential business partnership and new revenue streams they're always good things, I think. So I'm happy to hear about that stuff.
Yeah, and the other thing is like I'm gonna be away starting tomorrow. Like I'm going on vacation for a week, and so when I come back, I want to be able to like really hit the ground running on like the next big thing. Like we kind of closed the door on. It's just a week, like, but it's such a huge mental reset that, like, on Monday when I get back, I wanna be able to start the next big thing, and we actually have that all planned out. We know like exactly what it's gonna be, and we're at a good spot where I could, you know, spend the day just making stupid graphs and having 4 hours of meetings, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the cool things I was actually able to launch today was what I talked about last week, I believe, which is a new pricing model for the business. Where like people can connect up to a station, but listen only. But they also, the trade-off is that like it's super cheap, but you could also get kicked off at any moment if someone wants to connect up at a higher per minute rate.
Right.
And so we actually finished that. I just hacked something together that worked well enough and pushed it out to all the stations. And like the feedback has been nothing but positive. Guys are super excited about it. And so that's been really cool because we've been talking about that for like literally years, right?
That's awesome.
And finally all the time and all the tech stack kind of came together to make that change, you know, make the change easy, then make the easy change that finally came to fruition. So that was really nice. And so like, that's kind of the high point that I'm leaving off of from this week. Hopefully nothing breaks while I'm away next week. I'll have my laptop with me, but you know, God forbid something goes terribly wrong.
Right. Yeah. I was going to ask you about that actually. Like how does that work? Because it, you know, it's either me or Paul. And then since he's not around, it's me, you know, something, if I'm out doing something, if I'm out training or whatever, riding my bike, God forbid. I mean, I'm knocking my table right now cause we haven't had any issues in a while now that I think about it.
The nice thing about this feature is it's like, it's literally like we can just turn it off from the back end. So it's like, hey, just go in and change your settings and it'll go away.
That's great.
And I'll figure it out when I get back. Right? It's not going to come to that, but if it does, yeah, he could just turn it off while I'm away. So that's fine. I did think about that though. Cause like it's worse than pushing code on a Friday. It's pushing code like before a week long Friday.
A week of Fridays. Yeah. Well, I hope nothing. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure it'll be fine. Again, I'm knocking my table this whole time.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
Do you have any sort of like special alerting? Do you have like a bat signal or like a special red phone that goes off or anything like that? I'm trying to figure out how I would isolate like really important channels from just the rest of the noisy channels that I have.
It's a really good question. So we have a really noisy Slack channel. Which is, you know, noisy because it gets you know, every time like a piece of hardware fails, we get a notification there. And sometimes it's just a red herring, right? But no, we use we have AWS alerts set up for all our like load balancers and servers. Those get pushed to text messages. So if you get a text message, okay, you know it's bad, right? Like Slack you can turn off, but you can't ignore a text message. And we also use Uptime Robot, which is a good thing. It's just like kind of a ping-based thing for checking server health. We use that as kind of another line of defense. Those are the big ones, honestly. Like if things are broken, you're going to hear about those, how you hear about it from them first.
Right, yeah. We have an uptime thing too that I'm trying to remember what it's called right now. I'd have to open up my other notebook I have like a dashboard full of links in a different Notion. But yeah, so like an uptime monitor as well. And then I have like Heroku alerts and stuff set up, but I don't have anything SMS. I think maybe that's probably the best way to do it. Like if you get an SMS, it's a real issue. And that way I can turn on do not disturb mode and stuff on Slack, like I don't remember what they call the feature, but it's like your work hours or whatever, you know, like, hey, don't blast me with notifications after this hour or something.
Yeah. I have that set up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I'll have to do something like that. But I was thinking about like setting up a specific email address that is specific to like important notifications. And if that gets hit, something's real wrong. But I just haven't done anything like that. I think it's probably time now, especially being back down to one engineer, like time to really set that up, because I feel like you really just can't rest. Like I think when things first launched for Design Collective for a while, I just felt like I couldn't get real rest, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, totally. And like this happened recently where something happened with our database server where like it got, the CPU got pegged, some process was using up the CPU, and like it basically brought the whole app down because it's like a single point of failure, right? And I think I was in a movie or something. Like I literally had my phone off, right? And Lee didn't know what to do. He's just like, all I could do is restart the server. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, that's totally what I would have done. And it fixed it. So it's like, there's nothing else you could have done. You fixed it. It's fine. So sometimes you just kind of have to have those procedures for, you know.
Yeah.
Crap hits the fan.
Yeah.
I keep my laptop with me when I travel, but obviously I'm not going to like bring it to Disney World. Like,
right. Yeah. I usually just have mine in my backpack all the time. So if I'm out walking around, I'll just take my backpack, or if I'm riding my bike, I'll just take my backpack, you know, just in case. And I don't like to be that paranoid about it, but again, knock on wood, we haven't had an issue I don't even know if we've, probably since last year, since like third or fourth quarter last year. And in most issues that happen are actually like Heroku related.
Yeah, right. AWS exactly. Related,
you know, so yeah, maybe I should just not be as paranoid about it. I'm actually looking at the PagerDuty.com site right now, looking at the pricing page.
That's another good one.
Yeah. Well,
we also have Grafana set up, and you can set up alerts for those graphs as well. So
yeah,
we have CPU alerts on there.
Yeah. So what's it? Yeah, I don't necessarily want to get into it all right now because we're getting close to our time, but that's one thing that I don't necessarily have to, I guess I don't have to worry about RAM, but like Heroku will just restart your stuff if RAM runs out. It's not like your stuff will just crash. And I believe they let it ride for like an hour unless you go over 2x your allotment, and then they might force restart your dynos.
I mean, in my mind, you guys should be getting alerted when that even happens at all, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it shouldn't be happening.
You get alerted when you go over your allotment.
Okay.
But they don't do anything crazy. Like, they don't hard restart your app until you're over 2x. Or if it's like, if you're over your allotment for like an extended period of time. But you do get alerted right away. And remember the memory issues I was talking about maybe a few months ago? We haven't had those in a long time now.
That's great.
So we've been, I don't know if you can hear that, I'm smacking my desk around the room. We're in smooth sailing for a while. It's awesome. What's our production? I'm looking at my Heroku. Our production RAM usage is 209 megabytes right now.
209 entire megabytes?
Yeah, entire megabytes.
Man, that ought to be enough for anyone.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah, I love Elixir. Anyhow, I think that's all I got. I got some other stuff I can talk about next week, seeing if, I'm not going to jinx myself, so I won't talk about it. Never mind. Come again next week for a special surprise topic that I mentioned now, but I haven't talked about because I'm not going to jinx myself right now.
You could have someone on next week. I'll not be here.
Yes. I'm working that out. I have someone that's interested.
You got people knocking down the doors. Come on, don't sell yourself short.
Well, he did message me in the Elixir Slack and was like, "Hey, when we podcast again?" And I was like, "Funny you should ask." So yeah, we're all set up for a guest next week.
Sweet.
We'll miss you, but we hope you enjoy your
vacation. No, you won't. Get out of here.
We hope you don't check your emails, and we hope that the bat phone, your shoe phone, like, get smart. Your shoe starts ringing. We hope that doesn't happen.
I actually used to have a Converse. It was like a big Converse shoe that had like a phone in the base of it. It's like when you put it down, it would hang up. You know, like the burger phone, right? Where you, like, you know, burger phone.
From Juno?
Yeah, or I think they have one in Bob's Burgers, but yes, Juno, right? I didn't have a burger phone, but I had a Converse shoe phone. Same principle.
Interesting. I didn't know those were real.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, you put that in the show notes. Well, if anyone has any hiring experience and wants to help us out, we'd appreciate it. Or I guess on the other side, you know, like Rockwell, you said, from the perspective of an employee, I would also like to hear that, you know, like, what were some good experiences you had in trying to look for a job, and what were some bad experiences, and what should we stray away from? What made it the best experience? You know, I want to not give people a bad experience when interviewing. So we would love to hear any feedback on that situation.
This would be so much easier if I could just hire you, Sean. Why are you going to make it so difficult for me?
Because it would be easier if I could just hire you. Maybe we could just start a company, and then our companies could just contract our joint company out.
I don't know if you could say this on the air, dude. That's like treason or something. Corporate espionage.
Lindsay knows. I get a text message right now. Actually, speaking of text message, is Greg, friend of the show, Greg says hello. He was texting me maybe 20 minutes ago. He was like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I was like, "Hey, I'm recording." He's like, "All right, tell everyone, said hey, I'll leave you alone."
Shout out Greg.
Yes, shout out to Insomnia Greg. But yeah, feedback. We'd love to hear it. Appreciate it.
You can send us feedback at DNC Show on Twitter or the show account if you want to reach out to Sean directly. Sean Washbot. I am Schrockwell over there. Schrockwell. Schrockwell.
Schrockwell. Mr. S. Show notes are always available at DNC.show. We'll put all the links in the notes and slap them over there if you want to click on them instead of searching the Googles, because then Google knows what you're searching for. So we'll save you a step. Search for our show and then go to the whatever link you want to from the show notes at dnc.show.
You lost me, but if you want to go over to spectrum.chat, which you don't have to type into Google, you can just type it into your address bar because it's easy to remember.
They still know.
.chat. Well, yeah, if you're using Google, if you're using Chrome, I guess. We'll post the show notes over on spectrum.chat. You can have a real-time discussion with us over there. We'll get notifications. You can say hi. Or not. Say whatever you want. We'll be there. Spectrum.chat. Show notes.
And as always, thanks to Spec for having us and putting up with us. And thanks to Mikhail for editing the show and listening to all of the spit takes and the arguing before and after the show. We appreciate them for putting up with us. And if you're into other design and developer related podcasts, head on over to spec.fm and check out what's happening over there. We've got shows like Design Details and Fragmented. And we got shows like Swift Unwrapped and Developer Tea. So you don't want to miss out on any of those good episodes and those good learnings. So head on over to Spectre.fm and check them out.
As always, this episode of Does Not Compute was edited by Mikhail Delport and produced by Sarah Jackson.
I am setting up PagerDuty right now.
All right. I'm turning off my phone right now and not turning it back on for a week. How does that sound?
That sounds awesome.
Deal?
Yeah.
All right. See you in a bit.
All right, see ya.
Thanks again to Sentry.io for sponsoring Does Not Compute. Don't be like me and wait for your users to report errors before you can act on them. Iterate on your product faster, improve your customers' happiness, and make a better product with Sentry's comprehensive error reporting platform. Check them out for free at Sentry.io.